So good morning, everyone. I know it's Sunday morning, 10 a.m. So I really know that you did a lot to be here. You wake up very early today. Where you've been yesterday? Disco? Oh, the boat. Yeah, after the boat. Okay. So today we'll talk about cloud computing and Amazon Web Services. And this is my email and Twitter account, if you want to get in contact with me afterwards. So this is me. I'm a technology evangelist for Amazon Web Services. These pictures maybe explains everything much better. I already... Okay, good. So first, a few words about Amazon.com. Who knows Amazon.com? Okay, wait. Who buys things on Amazon.com? Just a few of you. So the others, we need to speak afterwards, okay? Just kidding. So Amazon is famous because it's the biggest retail web store in the world. But we don't just have the retail business. So you all know the retail business. You know that you can buy books, DVDs, electronics and other things on Amazon.com or other websites in the world. But we also have two other branches that sustain our business. One is the seller business, which means that we enable third parties to use our infrastructure to sell their things. So we enable merchants. Now keep it open. Yeah, it's better. Yeah, I just turned it on before because otherwise people will just get asleep. I'm trying to take them, to wake them up with some light. Maybe I can just shout so you can just, you know, wake up a little bit. So I was saying that we enable merchants to sell their things using the Amazon.com web store and the logistic. So why we do this? Who has a clue why we do this? Why we let other people sell their stuff using our website? What's the purpose? Do you have any guess? There was a guess? You raise a hand, I see you. You did something like this. So any guess? No one? To make money, but why? I mean, it's probably more profitable to sell things by ourselves. So why are we just open it to other people?
More money?
Yes, okay. Yeah, okay. So, but the point is why we make money doing this. The point is that if you allow other people to use your infrastructure, you reach bigger economies of scale. So it means that your infrastructure is bigger, you can save more money, so your business is more profitable. That's why we make more money. And this is very important because now we'll see, you know, the third business, which is the developer business, which means Amazon Web Services, is based on the same principle. So what happened was that around 2000, Amazon decided to move to create a new infrastructure based on a service-oriented architecture, SOA. So we created the so-called two pizzas team. A two pizzas team is a very technical definition, which means that if a team is working hard and it's working overnight and you can't feed this team with two large pizzas, it means that the team is too big and you'll need to split the team in two. So it's something that says, we accept teams of up to a few people, four, five, six people at most. And why is that? Because each team is in charge of one or more specific web services. When you hit Amazon.com, the website, you call something around 150 different Amazon web services. 150 is a lot, you know, it's a big number. So why these 150 or whatever is the number services are able to work together? They're able to work together because each one is independent from the others. So the infrastructure is loosely coupled. And this means that things may fail eventually. So some services may not be available at some time, but the other services know how to deal with this. So in a certain way, we built everything with failure into mind, which is good because when failure happens, you know what to do, of course. So after we built our infrastructure, we've seen that other companies had the same problems that we had. So how to scale, how to manage hardware, how to, you know, do all these things. And so we decided to do the same thing that we did with the merchants. Open the business to other people so our economies of scale can be much better. That's why we now have Amazon Web Services. These are the main features of our web services. Sometimes we call this cloud computing. Cloud computing doesn't really have a real definition today. You know, people may say that cloud computing is a new paradigm where you have on-demand resources that you access using APIs. Then you usually have a self-serve infrastructure, so you don't have to speak with people in order to get these resources. And you usually pay for what you use, so pay by the drink, or pay by the hour, or pay for what you use. You know, different definitions for the same thing. But these things all together are a very powerful change in the IT world. For example, if you think of prediction is a big problem. And why is a big problem? Do you know why? Prediction of computing needs. Why it's a big problem? Exactly. So it's almost impossible to know how much computing power you will need in the future. And in fact, this graph shows you why. So let's say that you have a traditional infrastructure. So for example, 100 servers, okay? So when you have 100, yeah, traditional, yeah. So a small one, right? So when you have 100 servers, of course, your computing capacity stays constant over time. So time is from left to right. And of course, you can see that the blue line is your computing capacity. And it stays constant over time. So at a certain point, you see that your predicted computing capacity, which is the gray line here, you can barely see it, but it's a gray dotted line that goes like this. You can see that in the future, like in 2 months, you will need more computing capacity. So what you do is you buy servers, they arrive. Some of them will not arrive, maybe, so you have to call them again. Then you have to put everything out of the box, put them into racks, power them, connect them, ask for more bandwidth, ask for more power, change the cooling system, maybe. Maybe the room is not big enough, and so on and so forth. So you have to do lots of things, you know, lots of efforts in order to have your expanded computing capacity in place. But when you have it, at a certain point, you will have a spark in your computing capacity, which is that point that says large investments. So large investments means, of course, that you have to pay a lot of money, right? But the problem is that since capacity is not well predictable, the real computing needs that you have, which is the red line here, is usually not going where you want it to be. So for example, if you are a consulting firm and you lose one customer, your computing capacity will go down the need of your computing capacity will go down. If you have two unexpected customers that ask you for, you know, some project, some web application or whatever, your computing capacity will go up again. But it's not easy to predict that capacity. So if you really think about it, the area between the blue line and the red line is what? What it is?
Unused computing
capacity. So it's a gain of money or a loss of money? Of course, it's a loss of money. Because if you are not using something that you paid for, it's a waste of money. So you can waste a lot of money if you're not good at predicting your computing capacity. And another thing is that if you are unexpectedly successful because your customers ask for more products or more services, or because your startup is having success, you will have a situation like that one in which the computing capacity that you need will grow too fast and you will not be able to give that computing power to the people, to your developers or your customers that need it. So you will lose opportunities. You will lose customers eventually. This is the prediction problem. And of course, if you have a way to activate computing capacity on demand, of course, it's very easy because you can just follow your computing needs, which is the yellow line here. So this is very important to consider because if you are able to do this, you don't have to worry about prediction anymore. You don't have to worry about wasting money or unexpected success. Everything is much more easy now. So let's see what Amazon has to offer for you. So we have a bunch of services. The most important are the infrastructure web services, which are this one. So the first one is S3. S3 stands for Simple Storage Service, and it's a storage on the internet. You store a file on internet. We create at least 3 copies of it. And then, of course, this file may be accessed by other people if you want it public, or it may just be private if you want it private, of course. EC2 provides you with virtual servers of different sizes. You can boot any Linux distribution on top of these servers. You will soon be able to boot Windows on top of it. You can boot Red Hat Enterprise Linux, OpenSolaris. You can use Oracle. You can do a lot of things on Amazon EC2. And you have root access to these machines. So basically, you can do whatever you want with these machines. And a few weeks ago, we announced EBS, which is a new feature for EC2. We use virtualization to provide you with virtual servers. So you know that when you use virtualization, when you instantiate one virtual server, and then for some reason you have to turn it down, or there is a hardware failure and it goes down. Anyway, the local disk space that was used by that virtual server is lost, of course. So if you want a persistent storage for your virtual server, you will use EBS, which is an external block device on top of which you create your own file system, and then you mount this file system into EC2. We also have SimpleDB, which is a database used to query huge amounts of data, structured data in real time. Pay attention, because this is not a relational database. It's just a database without relational attributes. So it's very specific for large data sets in which you need to query data in real time. SQS is the simple queue service. So as the name implies, is a queue. And this queue is used to send messages between different web services. So it's a way to orchestrate the web services together. We also have payment services. FPS is the flexible payment service. DevPay, the Mechanical Turk, and other things, but we'll not talk about them today. By the way, if you have any question, just raise your hand. So this graph shows you how big is Amazon Web Services, and well, how big it was almost 1 year ago now. So the blue line is the bandwidth used by all Amazon.com websites in the world. Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, the Canadian one, the German one, the British one, the French one, the Chinese one, the Japanese one, all together. The blue line is the bandwidth used by them. And as you can see, at starting of 2006, the bandwidth used by Amazon Web Services began to rise, and at the end of 2007, it was more than the combined bandwidth of all Amazon websites in the world, which is something, I will say, spectacular, because this explains you how big is Amazon Web Services. And just a few more numbers. We now have more than 400,000 developers using Amazon Web Services in the world. And just to give you an idea, S3 is the storage service, and objects is equivalent to files. So at the end of September 2006, quarter three 2006, we had 800 million objects into S3, which means 2.4 billion, because each object is stored at least three times for redundancy. At the end of June 2008, we had more than 22 billion objects. So this means almost 3,000% growth in 2 years, which gives you another idea of where we are going. So now a few more words about S3. I told you that when you put a file into S3, the file is replicated at least three times. Why do I say at least? Well, because if the file is public and it's downloaded many times, for example, a very popular video, it may be useful that Amazon replicates the files in more than three copies, so to allow more people to download the file smoothly. So we automatically scale up and down the number of copies of each specific S3 file or object, whatever. And, of course, when the number of requests is no longer heavy, the number of copies goes down back to three. So this means that S3 scales transparently for the user. So you just have to put a file there, and you don't have to worry about scaling the number of files that you can use there. So, for example, there are some customers that have websites, and instead of setting up a very complex Apache cluster, you know, a cluster of web servers in different machines, they have a few web servers, and then they store their files into S3, for example, pictures or videos or CSS or HTML pages even, so you can have static pages. But in that case, since S3 scales automatically, the load for the web server is much lower, so it's easier to host a website and to scale this website up and down accordingly to your needs, accordingly to the number of visitors that you have. Prices are 15 cents of a dollar per gigabyte per month, and this is 18 cents if you store files in the European Union. And then you pay for bandwidth. You start paying 17 cents of a dollar per gigabyte that you transfer, and then it goes down to 10, the bigger is your bill. And from November 1st, so in a few days, a new tiered pricing will be available, which means that when you have big storage, the price, that 15 cents a month, will go down, reaching even 10 cents a month if you store more than 500 terabytes of data, which is probably quite common to do. No, I'm just kidding, of course. It's for big customers. Any question about S3? Everything is clear? So, EC2, are you still awake, by the way? Just kidding. Yeah, the light was useful. So, EC2 means Elastic Compute Cloud. So it's a way to have virtual servers at your disposal. And you have the so-called AMI. AMI means Amazon Machine Image. An AMI is a disk image that is stored into S3. You can take this image and boot this image into one instance of EC2, which may be the small one, large one, extra large, or the high CPU, medium, and extra large. So we have five different kind of instances. The smaller one is the less powerful, and the high CPU extra large is the more powerful one. To give you an idea, the small one has the equivalent of one compute unit. So we use the compute unit to give you an idea of the computing power of that image. One compute unit is 1.2 gigahertz Xeon processor. So the small one has one compute unit, 1.7 gigabytes of RAM, dedicated RAM, 160 gigabytes of storage, which is not persistent. So if you want persistent storage, you use EBS, the Elastic Block Store. While, for example, the high CPU extra large has the equivalent of 20 compute units with 8 cores, 7.5 gigabytes of RAM, 1.6 terabytes of disk space, and so on and so forth. You use APIs to send command to access these machines. You can decide where you want to boot these machines. We have different zones. And you can also use IPs. You can borrow IPs from Amazon and then map these IPs to a specific machine. So, of course, you can do lots of things with these things. For example, you can use your DNS, point to that IP, and then host the website or do load balancing or whatever. And I would like to give you a short example of someone that is using EC2. I guess that you can hear the music. Do you remember anything about this? You know, I'm Italian, so of course I love doing this all the time. So this is a video, of course, of pictures about the World Cup in 2006. This is me, by the way. So I was celebrating in the street. It was a crazy day in Italy. So the interesting thing is that this is done using Animoto. Animoto is a startup in New York City. So what they did, they created a software that takes your pictures, takes your music, and then you mix everything together to create a video like this. As you can see, the transitions are nice, you know, and they are based on the kind of music that you have. So what is special about Animoto is that they started, Cannavaro, I love this guy. They started with their laptops, and all their IT infrastructure was into Amazon. This is me again. Into Amazon. So they use EC2, they use S3, they use all our services. So in their offices, they have, you know, desks like this. They have laptops and nothing else. So after a couple of years, they started in 2006. After a couple of years, they were doing quite well. They were using something around 80 instances of EC2 at the same time. So 80 servers, which is quite good. But what happens is that they launched a Facebook application. And the point about the Facebook application is that if you are successful in Facebook, you can guess that things may get really, let's say, successful, but really problematic, because Facebook is used by millions of people. So in their case, they had Amazon infrastructure on their back end. So they were able to do something quite unique, I will say. This is the number of instances that went from less than 80 up to 3,500 in 2 days and a half. This was mid-April 2008. So can you give me another example of something like this 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10? No one? Of course, no one, because this was not possible before Amazon existed. Because no one is able to give you this scalability unless you have a few million euros in your pocket. You can buy a few thousand servers and keep them quiet until you need them. But what happens if you're not successful? Of course, you have thousands of servers waiting there, silent, waiting for you, and you can know what to do with them. And what about the value of these servers? You know that every time you buy a server, the next month the server is 10%, the value decreases like 10%, because this is how computing goes. So what happens if you don't need that power? And of course, they would not have been able to predict this wild success. So instead of seeing a 404 page on their Facebook application, they were able to serve each customer. And this is very important, because they were able to get to 3,500 because here customers were served. Here customers were served. Here they were served, and so on and so forth. So they were able to serve them. They were, doing what I did, so take some pictures, take some music, and send it to friends. Because you have holidays, you have, when you graduate or when you marry, or, things like that. And you want to create a video like that, because it's nice, it's cool. I was celebrating in Italy. I had this bunch of pictures, and it was nice for me just to create a video and send it to my non-Italian friends. So it was particularly interesting for me, of course. So this is what happened, and this is something that gives you power. So how many of you have startups? Raise your hand. So it's about 6, 7, 8 people maybe. So how many of you work in startups? Of course, other than the 8 guys, I mean, of the others, who works for startups? Okay, so it's probably like half of the people here. So what happens if your startup is successful? You may need something like this. You may need some way to handle this success. So are you doing your startup business because you want to have success, or you're doing it because you want to fail? It's not a tricky question, because some people are not prepared for success. So they were prepared for success. In fact, if you look at this line here, of course this seems a flat line, but it's not a flat line. So if you look at this in 1 year, for them it was like this. So they said, well, guys, we are doing good. At the end of the year, we will probably need 300 servers. So we are successful, we are good. So they didn't even guess that they were going to do like this in 1 week. So they were prepared for success, and if you have something that deals with IT infrastructure, and I think it's almost always the case here, you would probably need an infrastructure that is able to scale if you are a success, and that is not draining your money if you're not successful. Because if you're not successful but you didn't pay for anything, you can start a new business and maybe be successful with the next business. Any question about this? So you're sleeping, or you're shy, or you are very smart because you don't have any question. Which may be, of course. I'm happy for you. Okay. I will take maybe some questions at the end.
Some questions about your reserve of servers.
Okay.
I
don't think so, because you know that Amazon has something called Christmas. We don't know, in Christmas our business is like 3 times, 4 times as usual, and we are able to deal with this. So we have an IT infrastructure that is big enough to really take care of any situation. So if you're going to ask, let's say, 1 million servers, we may have some problem in that case, but if it's something less than 1 million servers, I think we can accommodate everyone.
Even on Christmas?
Sorry?
Even on Christmas?
Even on Christmas, yes, of course. You know, we are very good at dealing with Christmas now. We really love that guy. You know, we are really good at doing this. And, you know, most customers use Amazon in Christmas, and then they get in love with Amazon, and they use it the following year. So for us, Christmas is a great way of increasing the number of customers. But the point is that, you know, prediction, your question is a very good one, because what happens for us, what is prediction for us, of course. So the point is that when you have 400,000 developers using your services, on a statistical point of view, it's almost a flat line, growing, but almost flat. So it's very predictable. Because if someone is using Animoto on Facebook, that someone, at the same time, is not using another service on another company, so that company will not grow like Animoto in the same time. So we have a finite number of people in the world using internet, and when someone has success, it usually means that someone else is sleeping in some way. So when you have a big number of customers, like in our case, the number of servers used is almost always constant and growing. But the growth is very predictable. The more, you know, the bigger is the number of people using the services, the easier it is to predict everything. So we just buy things in advance, and we are very cool with this. In fact, we never had a situation in which a customer wasn't able to ask for resources, never. Okay, good. So I predicted your question before you said that. You see, prediction, we are very good at prediction. So, when you use EC2, the virtual server, good morning, you may need to have a persistent storage. So what you do, you use EBS. EBS works like this. You create a virtual block device, so a block device like a disk, okay? You decide to have from 1 to 1,000 gigabytes of space. Then you create, of course, you can create as many as you want. You can create thousands of EBS instances. Then you create a file system on top of it, and then you can use this file system mounting it on an EC2 instance, for example. And of course, this is persistent. So you can, for example, unmount this volume from one EC2 instance and mount it to another EC2 instance within seconds. So it's very easy to do tricky stuff using EBS. And of course, EBS is persistent, but it's also very, very fast. Any questions about EBS? There was a question? Okay, not yet. Okay. So we'll just skip SQS and SimpleDB since I want to keep some time for questions. I already told you that SQS is used as a queue system, so to orchestrate the services, and SimpleDB is a database to query structured data in real time. But it's, you know, you can find lots of documentation about these on the website, so we'll just skip this and dedicate more time to other things. So let's say that I convinced you that Amazon Web Services are a cool service, which may be true or not. So what you have to do to use them, it's very simple. You create an Amazon account, the one that you can use, for example, to buy things into Amazon.com websites. Then, of course, you can sign up for Amazon Web Services. For example, if you look here, this is the web page, aws.amazon.com, and you can see there on the right side that there is a big button saying sign up now. And of course here you can find lots of information about all the web services. Here, these are the infrastructure web services, Elastic Compute Cloud, SimpleDB, S3, SQS, the premium support and other things. And here you can find information like a security white paper, which is a very good document if you want to read it, or other things. And of course, here you can find the community forums where you can ask questions. So you can sign up there. And then when you sign up, you need to accept a specific service. For example, you can accept S3, you can accept EC2, and then you can start using these services. For example, for EC2, you know that EC2 is a virtual server, so it's somewhere else. So you have to authenticate to that server to be able to do something with it. So you create a key pair, and then you authenticate with this key pair, for example, to launch the server, and then you can use it to access the machine. And you use the AMI tools to send commands from the terminal, or you can use other things like ElasticFox, which is a Firefox plugin that allows you to manage EC2 instances, EBS volumes, and things like that. Or you can use S3 Organizer, which is another plugin for Firefox to handle S3 and things like that. And of course, you can, after this, you can really play with these services and understand what they're all about. So, yes. Well, what you can do is you can use the APIs. So, for example, I don't know what language do you use, but if you use, Okay, but you know, really, what language do you use for your application? PHP. Okay, so we have libraries for the major languages like Java, PHP, Python, Rails. So you can use these libraries to send API commands to EC2. So if you have your software and you want your software to access our cloud, you can use these libraries to send commands in minutes. It's very easy to set up something like that. In fact, libraries are out there for these reasons. And this is something that people do all the time. They usually have, for example, there are backup services. These backup services are written in PHP or Java. They have a client, and that client takes, for example, a file from the local computer, and using these libraries, send the files into S3 in our cloud. So it's very easy to do this. And it's all well documented on the documentation pages. Other questions? Okay, I'll go on. So how to use AWS? So what you can do with AWS? One thing you can do is development, for example. You can, set up a programming environment. You can test different server configurations. You can test clusters. You can do lots of things because it's very cheap to have a specific number of machines running for you. For example, there was a guy that wrote me an email, and he said he was very happy with Amazon Web Services because he was able to do his homework for a project. He's still a student in a university. And he had to set up a cluster of MySQL servers. So instead of asking to the lab to have a few machines available, which was not possible by that time, he just fired up a few instances into Amazon EC2. He did a setup of MySQL server. He configured the cluster, he did some tests, he shut it down, and he spent a few dollars doing this. So it was very cheap for him. And of course, there are thousands of examples like this. So you can really use these machines as a way to do tests or to try out some features or things like that. Of course, you can use you can use AWS to provide scalable hosting for your applications, for your customers' applications, or you can even become an hosting provider using AWS. Who knows? So, for example, this is a link to a tutorial by Thomas Broxrost, which is a Norwegian guy. He explained how to set up Django on EC2 and EBS. And this is a very good tutorial because Django is quite popular even in EC2. And This setup is like 15 minutes tutorial, so it's very easy to do this even if you don't really know Django. So you can really do hosting, for example, using EC2, and it's particularly easy. And of course, you can do many other things. For example, there are lots of companies or scientific institutes. They use EC2 for scientific computation. Some of them use it for data analysis, media streaming, or video processing, video streaming, and things like that. There is another, a new service called Panda, which is a video streaming open source platform that gives you the power of YouTube in an open source environment. So there are lots of things you can do with EC2 and the other services. And if you think about it, you just have an IT infrastructure that is very elastic, so you can shape it on the size that you want. Oh, thank you very much. On the size that you want, so you can think of any kind of application with that. And one interesting thing, especially for you, since this is a growing market, there is a huge demand of people with knowledge of how AWS works. And when I go around, you know, in conferences and things like that, there are always people asking me, do you know any, you know, good programmer that knows how to deal with AWS and things like that? And my guess is that this market is growing, so there will be a huge demand for developers or system administrators with skills on AWS, so with specific skills. So this may be very interesting to get, you know, a new job if you don't have one or if you want to change. So, as conclusions, I guess it was not too boring on Sunday morning. You know, you could have been in your bed sleeping and dreaming. Instead, you are here listening to me. So it was very nice of you. Thank you very much. And my conclusion is that, especially in a place where IT infrastructure is very expensive, if you compare costs here and in the United States, for example, you know that the same service, the same quality, the same level of service is much more expensive in the Czech Republic than in the United States. And this is because bandwidth is more expensive, power is more expensive, there is not enough economy of scale, like we have, for example. So this means that Amazon Web Services may be really effective as a way of saving money and saving time. You don't have to worry about hardware anymore, which is something pretty interesting. So thank you for listening to me, and please come up with any question. Yep. Latency, yeah. Yeah, so we are working on this. The question is when we will have EC2 in Europe. We already have S3 in Europe, and we are planning to provide EC2 in Europe very soon. We don't have a release date yet, but we are doing it, so it will be quite soon. Other questions? Yes? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the question is some examples of costs comparison. I will be provocative here. So let's say that you have one server or a few servers. What happens if you break one hard disk drive or what happens if power goes down, or what happens if your bandwidth provider has some problems, or what happens if the motherboard burns, or what happens in 3 years when your server will be obsolete, and things like that. So it's not easy to know the real cost of owning a server. You can have a comparison when you compare, you know, a virtual server from someone else to Amazon server. But in general, today, the point is that having your own hardware in-house or in a co-location or something like this, it's usually not convenient unless you're not working on it, you're just playing with it. So if you're doing it just for fun, you have your blog, maybe a small website or something like that, it doesn't really make any difference. But if you wanna run a business on top of it, you probably see a difference, especially if you take all the risks into account. So what happens, for example, if you break a hard drive? You have to replace it. To replace it, you need a spare hard drive sitting in your room waiting for some other hard drive to break. And when you break it, you have to change it. Is it a hot plug hard drive, or you need to shut down the machine? If you need to shut down the machine, what happens to customers that are connected in that moment? So you have lots of problems around the hardware management. And in fact, the point is that you have to forget about hardware management. And if you run, for example, one EC2 instance for 24 hours a day for 1 month, it's very easy because to calculate, because you can spend 10 cents an hour for the small instance. So it will be $72 a month for a machine that is running, always running, all the time. But the point is not just comparing a single server to an Amazon EC2 instance, because if you will always need a single server, you don't really have to bother with Amazon Web Services at all, because the point about Amazon Web Services is that you can use APIs to orchestrate your IT infrastructure. You can, you know, launch 20 servers, 3,500 servers like Animoto did in a few days, and you don't have to worry about scaling. You don't have to worry about bandwidth. You don't have to worry about power. And if you take, even if you take a physical machine in your room, and of course it costs like a few hundred dollars or euros maybe to buy it, right? But you have to power it. You have to provide bandwidth to it. So how much you spend for bandwidth, how much you spend for power, how much time you spend personally, because, you know, your time is money. When the server arrives, you have to, you know, set everything up. You have to power it. If something breaks, you have to change it. So you waste time. And instead of being a developer or a system administrator, you know, instead of doing what you do best, you just do some very low value activity, which is managing hardware. So if you manage thousands of servers all together, you may be efficient, like we do in our data centers, because we have, you know, thousands and thousands of servers in many data centers. So we can do it very effectively. But if you do it by yourself, you will not be effective. You will not be, let's say, economically convenient. So the point is, if you have a business, I don't know, what kind of business do you have? Do you work by yourself or you work for someone else? Okay, so you are part of a company?
Yes, I'm one of the developers.
Okay, one of the developers. So you work for customers, right?
Right.
Okay. So, for example, there is just to give you a very practical example, there is a project called EC2 on Rails. I'll just show you the web page. This is very interesting because I told you that when you launch an EC2 instance, you choose a disk image and you boot that disk image to the server, okay? So one point is that when you have to provide a service to a customer, you have to create, to set up an environment for this customer. So what EC2 on Rails does, it provides you with an image that you can boot, and this image is, has some configurations and some scripts that helps you in setting up an environment in a few minutes. For example, with this one, you can decide to have a front end, a back end, for Mongrel servers, MySQL servers, even a load balancer, things like that, in minutes. You just configure the script, and then you launch the instance, and you're done. And they use Capistrano to orchestrate everything. So with this one, you can do this in minutes. When you want to do it by yourself, you need maybe a few machines. You need hours and hours of development because you have to set up everything together. And when you have new versions or new customers, you have to do everything again from the beginning, so you waste time. So this is another value that you have from Amazon Web Services, that you can really use some tools provided. This is an open source project, so it's open to everyone. You can also contribute to it, which could be very nice. This is very interesting because you save time. So if you save time, you save money, because if you ask 1,000 euro to your customer, and this is because you are planning to work, 20 hours for that customer, if you are able to do the same service for 10 hours instead of 20, you are earning double the money. So you are saving 500 euros in that case, in this hypothetical case. So you are saving money when you don't have to waste time in dealing with hardware, configurations, and things like that. And if you have, if you have one customer that has a successful business, this customer will tell you, I need you to scale my application because you have to do this. So how you do this if the customer is very successful? You need a platform that is able to scale whenever you need it. And when you don't need it anymore, just scale down so you don't have to pay for it. If, you know, most people that make calculations of how much is the cost of Amazon EC2, they usually do a mistake, which is they compare one server running into Amazon and another virtual server somewhere else. But the point is that if you have a real business, one server is not enough. But with Amazon, you can scale the number of servers running up and down, and you will pay only for servers that are running. So if you have, for example, a peak in your traffic, let's say that you go on dig.com or you are slash dotted or something like this, you can launch more servers for a few hours, and then you can turn them off when you don't need them anymore. So you don't need spare capacity. So the flexibility is the key value of this. This is the real difference. So when you make comparison, I would say that owning your own hardware is not an option anymore today. So you have to compare it with maybe other virtual server providers, which is smarter as a comparison. But when you do this, other service providers can't give you the possibility to use APIs. They don't give you something like this, for example, which saves hours of your time. And they don't give you the flexibility of Amazon Web Services. So this is the way you have to do your calculation. And there is also an online AWS calculator. So it's a simple JavaScript page in which you put the number of hours, the number of instances, the bandwidth, and it tells you how much you're going to spend each month. So it's probably useful if you just Google it and you will find it. Another question? So, you don't buy cars because Ford may shut down tomorrow?
Well, I still have Ford. You know, I already have it. So
but why don't you build your own cars today? Cars, driving cars. Why don't you build them? Because it's easier to buy them. You don't have to worry about hardware in that case. Same thing with Amazon. And of course, you know, Amazon is a very wealthy company, so it's not going to shut down in the future. But another thing is that you own your data. So if really something like this happens in the future, and I hope not, of course, but if something like this happens, you can take your data, take your applications, and put them somewhere else in another hosting provider, for example. Of course, you will have to spend a few hours doing this, but you can do it. You own your data. It's yours. So the point is that even other hosting providers may fail. So owning things, for example, if you own your own hosting service, what happens if the bandwidth, if the connection goes down? What happens? What happens if that company fails? You will not be able to do anything because connection is not there anymore. So you always have to rely on someone else. Being a power electricity company, connection company, or things like that. You always have to rely on other people. So my point is, do what is easy for you. Like, for example, these services are easy because you don't have to worry about electricity, cooling, hardware failures, connectivity, things like that. You don't have to worry about them. Same thing with cars. If you make the comparison, you don't really build your own car because you want a car that is already made for you, and you want it from someone that knows how to build cars, that builds millions of cars each year. So same with Amazon. We deal with thousands and thousands of servers each day. We do it for our own infrastructure. And in 15 years, for example, we never lost a single credit card. We never lost data in 15 years, which in internet time means all history of internet. This is very, you know, important if you think about it. Yep. Okay, how big is that? How big is that city?
Several DVDs,
like I don't know, 100 gigabytes, something like that. Yeah, of course.
So if there is such option, or if I can easily do it, and I can probably do it and not download everything, but it will be probably, you know, a lot of data.
Yeah, you're right. So you have a connection in your office, right?
Yeah.
So with that connection, you can download files from internet. So if you download files from S3 today, you will download 100 gigabytes in maybe, I don't know, a few hours, something like this. I don't know how big is your connection, but S3 is not the bottleneck. The bottleneck is your connection in your office. So today what you can do is you can just download these files into your local computer from S3. It may be interesting to think of a sort of a backup service, whatever you may call it, so something like this. Maybe it's more interesting for bigger customers, like, you know, customers that have terabytes of data. Because for something that is below 1 terabyte, I would say that it's much simpler to do it.
We don't have too much gigabytes, but we have, 200.
But okay, but it's always new data, or you can also do a diff.
Yeah, that's right.
So if you do the diff, it's maybe a few gigabytes each time. And you can even do this in real time. There is a customer that I'm thinking of that has the same situation as you. They have, I think, something around 20 terabytes of data stored into S3. And each time, like each hour, they make a diff, so the new files, and they download them from S3, so they have an updated backup all time. And the diff, of course, is a very small one, like I think less than 1 gigabyte for them. it's very easy to do that. So, of course, they pay for this, but I guess that you pay for that service too. And it's probably, I mean, it's included in the price that you pay. In some way, someone is going to pay for that. But if you send me an email and you give me some more specifics, I can even help you in having an idea of the amount of money that you would spend using S3, and then I can help you with any other question if you want, which is very nice of you. And really? Huh. Why don't you send me an email about this? I will. Okay. I mean, send me an email with not with the number, of course, just with the provider, with the bank, and I will check it out. Because it's not Visa or MasterCard, it's something else.
Only does work.
Sorry?
Most credit cards work. It's only that there are some debit cards which...
which doesn't work?
Yeah,
which don't work?
Like Maestro and stuff like that.
Ah, Maestro, okay.
I think it can be used basically anywhere. It's called Provo and Amazon.
Well, debit cards are a different question.
Yeah.
Because we charge you at the end of the month. So we use credit cards for that, or PayPal or whatever. Oh, really?
It's not a problem with Amazon.
Ah, okay, so it's, okay. But maybe we can talk with them. They usually listen to Amazon. So, I mean, if you want, just send me the detail. We'll forward it to the appropriate person, maybe. Or you can use the Amazon debit card, credit card, you know. No, just kidding. Yeah, we have one, but it's for U.S. customers only. I can't have it either. It's a pity because you get some discount on the shipments with that, but I can't use that. Maybe you can just move to the US for doing that. Okay, other questions? Yes? Uh-huh. Okay, I will give you more details. So we have an infrastructure that listens to API comments. So for example, you can send API comments from your terminal. Once you are authenticated, you can say, for example, EC2 describe images, which is a comment that gives you a list of all the images available. You can launch instances, you can terminate instances, things like this. Amazon Cloud doesn't really care if you are sending comments using a terminal or using a Java library or using other things, but these comments are used to manage the EC2 instances that are running. And, for example, if you want, let's say you want to load balance your servers, what some people do, they have a script that when the CPU load goes over 80%, for example, they send an SQS message. So it's an API call to SQS, which says, I want a new EC2 instance. And so SQS manages all these things. So this is the way we orchestrate it. And of course, you can use also tools to automatically orchestrate scaling and downscaling, like Scala, RightScale, Cohesive FT. You know, there are some companies that are providing these services. You have another question? Yep.
I loaded Megabyte. I wanted to know because sometimes things happen like programmer drop table on the living server in not on development one.
Uh-huh. What you can do, for example, if you use EBS, EBS was created because people wanted to use databases in a reliable way. So it was mostly, it was requested mostly for databases. So when you run a database on EBS, this is very cool because you can back up the entire EBS volume into S3, and all the subsequent backups are just incremental backups. So you can do you know, it like every minute, it will be a few kilobytes, so the expense will be, the cost will be a very small cost. And you will have a snapshot of the entire volume at a given time. And it's very easy to do this because you just use one API comment. Furthermore, let's say that you have, for example, let's say that you write numbers from 1 to 10 on your virtual block device. Then you create a snapshot, which is 1 to 10, okay? Then you write 11 and 12. And then when you create a snapshot, it says 11 and 12 because it's the incremental. Then you write 13 and 14, and then it creates 13 and 14. Then, if you erase the 1 to 10 S3 object, instead of losing your database, basically, when we don't have, when we have incrementals, but we don't have the base, we keep that file and we attach it to the closest incremental. So even if you do it by mistake, you will not lose it as long as you have at least one incremental somewhere. That incremental always have all the rest because there is a mechanism that prevents, erasing your data when you have incrementals, because that incrementals will be referring to something that doesn't exist. So to prevent this, we do this. And in fact, it's a very cool feature because it's even better than snapshots. To do this in the real world, you usually use ZFS, the file system from Sun Microsystems, or you use a very complicated backup software EMC Square, Legato software, or things like that, which is very expensive. So this feature is very valuable, and it's very easy to use because it's transparent. You don't have to say anything. If you erase the base backup, it will keep it as long as you have one incremental. So it's very easy to do this. And, of course, you can go back in time because when you save the incremental, on your API call, you can just use a timestamp so you know where to go back in time for that thing, of course. Other questions? Yes. Okay, S3 is not a file system. It's just a bunch of files. You don't have a hierarchy into S3. You just have files, which are called objects, and you have the equivalent of directories, which are called buckets. Buckets is a container. You don't have a hierarchy, so you don't run a file system on S3. You run a file system in EC2 on the local hard drive, and you can run a file system on EBS. So EBS is used as a persistent file system. If you run a database, you need a file system for performances. If you try to run a database using S3 files, it will be very slow. So think of S3 as a backup of some sort, or as a way to provide specific files on internet, for example, video files. If you don't want to worry about scaling that video file or that pictures, you just put them on S3 and we take care of scaling. For example, you remember that there was a link before about Django on EC2 and EBS, a tutorial. This one. Yes, this one. So this guy had this problem. He had a website with, I think, something around 600,000 visitors a day, something like this. So instead of buying new machines, and instead of using more EC2 machines, he decided to create static pages. The site was written in PHP, I think, to create static pages every day. And these static pages are served on S3. So the web servers has a very low load because if you just have to send someone to a specific file, it's very easy. You don't have to process PHP, for example, or to call a database. So with the same amount of servers, it was able to, the CPUs were like 90%. Now they are like 5% because they just send users to a specific static file. So it's much easier for him. And he did this. It was a very smart way of doing this. But he really understood how to use S3. So another person would have done like, you know, have another 20 EC2 instances with a cluster of Apache, with a cluster of MySQL, so we can serve these pages. Wait a minute. We don't need dynamic pages every minute. In that case, they didn't need it. So they just create static pages, and they create them with EC2. So at like 3 a.m. in the night, it turns on a few dozens of EC2 instances. They create the static pages, and they shut it down all automatically. So the cost is very small because it's running a few instances for a couple of hours, maybe every day. So it's less than running everything all day long. And the servers are now much faster because almost everything is served from S3. So you can use S3 also as a way to free some load from your web servers. But you don't think of S3 as a file system. When you need a file system, you use the local disk space of EC2, or you use EBS with a file system on top of it. You can also use OpenSolaris on EC2, so in that case, you can use ZFS as a file system on top of EBS, which is a very cool feature. You have another question? Someone else before you? Okay, you. Parallel development? Ah, okay.
So we should first of all, each shop we should use, or what is the best way to use a new instance, or create like under one instance?
If you also manage the administration rights, so the best thing will be to have all the shops in a few servers, load balanced, with some redundancy on front end, a database back end with one database for each customer, but the database management system all in a clustered situation, which it will be much better because you will need less instances, less machines. It will be much more cost effective for you. You mean with EC2? If you do what I told you, like having a base install and then create a new database for the customer and a new DNS entry to an Elastic IP, there is no way of doing this automatically. I mean, you just need a few scripts. It's probably a few minutes of work. There is no way of doing this automatically right now. I think I am running out of time, so if you have any other question, I will be just outside the room. I think that someone else is speaking after me. So thanks for listening, and I hope it will be interesting for you. Thanks.